This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Well, we are now into officially the third day, so we've missed or crossed over the halfway point of the Fort Hague Convention last night, sometime early this morning, and boy, that went on till the wee hours of the morning. Trust me on that, my room overlooks the lobby, so I don't care how close to the window my bed might be, the cacophony still comes through the door. So whether I want to be part of the sessioning or not, the bar closes, I think, at midnight here instead of 2. I don't know why, but the sessioning closes. It usually gets more quiet about 4 a.m. But anyhow, all is well, and we're having a great time. And I'm here with my friend and yours, Alan Fisher, one of my buddies also from 4F, and also a lover of the Magic Word podcast, just like you, or you wouldn't be listening. Hey, Alan, good morning.
Good morning, pal. How you doing?
Fantastic. Nothing less than great. So let's talk a little bit about last night's show. We had we haven't had a chance to kind of recap as to what happened then. Yesterday we had the lecture by Jeff Hobson, which was really great. Then we had a one-trick lecture by several gentlemen who did just that, taught us one trick, and they were not all card tricks and had a good variety. We talked a little bit about that with some of the guests yesterday that we chatted with, so you can go back and listen to day two and hear what we said about that. And then later in the afternoon, we had, what was that, before the evening show? Was there anything going on?
Well, that was the one-trick lecture.
Yeah, but nothing before, after that?
No. Okay. No, after that, we were wide open until we got to the evening, and it was the FISM competition show. These were the four gentlemen that the IBM is sponsoring to compete this year at FISM. So we got a chance to get a peek at the exact acts that got them into FISM and that they're going to take to FISM to compete.
Stage and close-up.
Yes. And based on what I saw last night, I think the United States is going to be bringing home a trophy because those acts were phenomenal. I am so glad I competed last time. And against many of these same people.
Oh, is that right?
Ed Ripley and Stuart McDonald and I all competed in Korea. And I'm looking at them now going, oh, damn, they got better.
They did. They practiced all year. I mean, I talked to some of those guys about what they've been doing. And in fact, tomorrow morning for the Merlin Breakfast, Stuart McDonald is going to be talking about his journey to FISM and how he is prepared for all this. And it has been a journey.
Oh, he completely reworked the approach of the act.
I can tell that. And the music and everything.
The music, yeah. Last time when he did it, which was the act he did on Penn & Teller Fool Us, it was spooky. It was more dramatic. And this time, he wanted to add more comedic elements to it. Mm-hmm. So it's the same basic tricks and setup, but he's approaching it from a different angle. It's more the Harold Lloyd, what's going on? It's not as much spooky. It's just, and then it's a silly, and he's reacting differently.
Right.
And
so but they're genuine reactions, because I had seen some other people, not competitors, but some performers sometimes, in which that it is obvious acting of surprise or whatever, but his seems so genuine.
He worked very hard on the acting end of it to be able to bring realism in to do the comedy. He felt very comfortable with the dramatic side of it, but when he moved into comedy, he's like, it's still got to play as real.
Yeah.
And the more he can play it as real of what's happening to him, the better the whole thing comes across, and he did such a marvelous job.
Yeah, he did. And he closed, actually, last evening.
Yeah.
And
Chris
Capehart was the MC.
Chris Capehart was the MC, who was absolutely wonderful and just threatened us all night long. If we didn't applaud wildly for the competitors, he was going to do Professor's Nightmare. And he would walk out and just show those ropes and threaten. And we would stand and cheer.
Yeah.
And then he'd walk off. And at one point, it wasn't enough. And he went, I've got Color Monty. Yeah.
And I will do this.
Yes.
But the opening act was Elliot Hunter, I believe.
Elliot Hunter, who did an absolutely beautiful classic manipulation type act with cards and billiard balls. So nicely timed to the music. So, but very high energy, not the slow, methodic.
It was like ballet in action, the way he would point and stuff with his feet. And his choreography and blocking
was
great.
It was his entire body that was part of the presentation. Mm-hmm. It was the dramatic move here, but the timing to the music, the change of silks from color to color, balls changing color to color, and all of a sudden, just bam, he'd have four in each hand. Mm-hmm. There was, you're going, where's the load? Wait a minute, there's no way. His hand was in front.
Yeah.
He's got two balls in his right hand, nothing in his left. All he did was rotate his hands, and now he's got eight.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
It's not supposed to work like that.
Yeah. I know the bit. Hang on. You know? And, oh, just beautiful workings with the balls and manipulations. And then he got into the cards, and fans of cards were just coming out, and single productions into more fans and more fans and more fans. And then the cards started enlarging at the end, getting bigger and bigger. And he's still out of nowhere producing jumbo fans of cards.
Yeah.
Just incredible.
You can see why that he is going to be one of the competitors at FISM.
Yes.
You know, I had seen his act last year when he had won at Abbott's Get Together. And that was the first convention after lockdown last August. So we're now about coming up on that full year. In fact, that'll be right after FISM, having Abbott's then again, which I'll be reporting on. I'll be there then too. But you need to have a chance if you haven't seen this young man. And I say young man because he really is. What is he, about 22, I think, or something? We spoke with him yesterday, so you can go back again and listen to yesterday's episode of this report and hear what he had to say as far as how he prepared for this then as well. Next after Hunter was who? Rally
after,
Hunter.
Yeah, after...
Man with two first names. I get this
man. Yes. Well, we had Eric Tate, who came in. Eric, the face, if you'll, of Penguin Magic.
And voice.
I've known Eric for a long time. Good buddy. And he didn't just design a routine with cards, a variation of a three-card Monty kind of bit. His suit that he wore.
Oh, he looked elegant.
He has custom-made suits. Mm. An Italian tailor that had cost, you know, billions of dollars to put together. But he has a suit when he's doing his act at the castle.
Hmm.
This was the suit specifically created for his FISM act.
Hmm. Really? You told me that.
With the special everything and to be able to have the look that he wanted and the pockets, the abilities, and everything. So that was his FISM suit. And I think this was the first time he was, you know, showing it to everybody.
Yeah, to the magicians.
Yeah.
Since he is a friend of yours, you'll enjoy this because I had a chance yesterday to sit down with him, and I'm doing an episode. I did sit down for an hour, and we chatted. So it'll be coming up in a future podcast. And he talked a little bit about that, about how that he had to revamp that because he was asking for advice on his journey as he was practicing this, and people were making suggestions. Like, for one example, his hands dipped below the table one time, and somebody said, well, there was when you did the switch. And so he said, I've completely revamped that, so my hands never go below the table. And he fooled the heck out of me then yesterday, because I was kind of watching for that. I don't know how he did that. It was amazing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, his hands never leave the table. His fingertips, his fingers stay on the table the entire time.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet steals are happening. You go, okay, part of the routine is the cards are invisible.
Yeah.
And you start to think, has he really figured out how to do it? Because
I can't. Cloak of invisibility.
I don't know where he pulled that card from, but it was invisible. And then suddenly it's visible under a bill, a $20 bill that's sitting on the table that's been there. You're like, no.
That was very good. So after
after that was
Eric
Ed
was,
Ripley.
Yeah.
Ed Ripley, a good buddy of mine. From many years at the Winter Carnival of Magic convention in Pigeon Forge.
And he's been working on this fact for a long time. It's a cup and ball routine, basically, of three different characters.
Three different characters, yeah. I remember first seeing it, probably 10 years ago when he was coming up with the idea. And, yeah, he does three completely different characters presenting a classic cups and ball routine. Very traditional at first. And then it's a hip-hop rap. And then it ends with Forrest Gump. Mm-hmm. And he just, he changes costumes. Yeah. He changes character. And you...
Scripting.
Part of it is laughing because it's Ed, and it's so far out of what his normal kind of comfort zone would be. He really stretched artistically to put this together and has put so much work into making sure every move is right, and that script, as you mentioned, the script is there, the lines are just right and fit what he's doing, and it's just a standard cup and ball routine, but then he puts some twists in it, and for you, a few little left turns you don't know about.
Good finish at the third one,
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then they take a new character, and he's got whole new lines, but it's the same movement. And you sit there and you look at that and you go, that's what everybody preaches, making the magic your own.
Yeah.
You take an existing effect and you make it your own. And we do that a lot in Ring 2100 of preaching that, and you want to do... You went to the dealer room and you bought Stratosphere. Okay, wonderful. Now what do you do with it that's going to be different from someone else? And here Ed is showing you three completely different ways to do the same trick all in one 10-minute act.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lesson in itself. I'm curious, though, also, because, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe he has competed with this act at FISM, so I'm wondering if the judges will see this differently.
It wasn't this act. The last time in Korea when Ed and I competed.
Was that the printing machine?
Yes, that was the printing machine and a slightly different.
He was going for originality, I think, on that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Plus, he was entered for the Invention Award. Mm-hmm. For a different variation of a cup and ball that he had put together. This was an act he had done, I think the first time I saw it was around 2016 or so, the SAM convention in Pittsburgh.
I remember seeing it at 4F.
He did it at 4F, did it at Winter Carnival when he was putting it together, and he just worked on it and took it up a whole new level.
Yes.
And we saw that last night. He got the standing ovation he deserved at the end of that act.
There again, for people who want a little bit more detail, listen to episode one report of this on the first day, because I talked with Ed pretty much at length about the development of this act then, too. Okay, after, I think
that was Stuart McDonald.
Stuart, yeah. And we just talked about him.
He came out and finished off his incredible act.
Now, you mentioned 2100. Tell me about that and what's happening then tomorrow.
IBM Ring 2100 does a Zoom gathering every month on the third Saturday. Mm-hmm. Ryan Pilling is our brainchild behind the scene, keeping it running. I'm just the pretty face on camera, which people argue about the pretty part, but I'm glad they don't argue about the face part. We're looking at the calendar, go July. Oh, the third Saturday, we're in Atlanta. It's the convention. We'll move it up a week because we can't push it back. We're going to be heading to FISM. That's Canada. We'll go a week early. Oh, okay, everything great. And Chuck Arkin, who is one of the co-chairs, he and Oscar Munoz, mm-hmm. who have done a phenomenal job putting this convention together.
Mm-hmm.
He was on one of our 2100 meetings about 3 months ago. And he goes, you know, we were going to have some kind of a Zoom thing happening, but it fell apart or we just couldn't get it to work. Why don't you do the 2100 from the convention on your normal day? And I went, you think we can? Yeah. Why not? Mm-hmm. So Ryan and I started work. Ryan's been talking with the tech people. So we will do a live Ring 2100 virtual gathering from in the Grand Salon where all of the events have been happening all week, Saturday at 1 o'clock.
Eastern time.
Eastern time, yeah.
Yep. So those of you who are listening then tomorrow, because this will be posted today, so there'll be one more daily report as you're listening to this. You might, and it's any time close to 1 o'clock, go to your computer and get on Zoom. Or go through Facebook, or how do you reach it?
If you look on most of any of the magic websites on there, there is a link to get the Zoom link. We're restricting this one to IBM members only since we're coming from the convention. Mm-hmm. Normally, we have an open door policy.
Okay.
Anyone in the magic community can come to Ring 2100, and we call it the gateway drug to the IBM. We sneak you in once you're there. But since we're at the convention, it's IBM members only. You go out to the website that Ryan put together, and it's on.
You have to put in your member number or something?
Yeah, your name, city, and your member number. And then the computer says, oh, yes, good. Sends you the Zoom link. And at 1 o'clock Eastern time, hopefully we go live. And it may only be 60 or 90 minutes. It's not going to be a huge, long thing. We'll get a few people from the audience to come up and talk or perform. Hopefully some of the folks on Zoom will get a chance to perform some stuff. And it'll be like we normally do when Ryan's sitting in Canada and I'm sitting in Tennessee.
Yeah.
Except we're going to be here with a live audience.
Well, there's so many people out there who are listeners who are members of the IBM around the world and are not at this convention or may not be able to make because you're in Lithuania or wherever right now listening. But you're
Plus
a member of the IBM. This
limited
you.
The number of people that could come.
That's right, 500
so
capped
many.
Out.
Yeah.
Which was another thing, by the way, we forgot to talk about last night, this fabulous poster that we got when David Copperfield went live again with us, speaking of Zoom.
Yeah, David has been with us the last two nights and will be with us again tonight, coming from his museum and showing us the
different rooms. Yeah.
He did a magic trick live with us.
Yeah.
A gentleman to the audience, he goes, does anybody have a deck of cards? And of course, everyone's in hysterics. And he went, oh no, an ungimmicked deck of cards. And half the hands went down. and he had a gentleman shuffle the deck, peek at a card. Don't tell anyone. Just he was the only one that knew what it was. And David said, all right, tell me. And of course, that gets a big laugh. It's like, well, the guy said, the Ten of Diamonds. Mm-hmm. All right. And he pointed
behind
to
him.
These card stars. There was three of them on the shelving behind him that had been in view the entire time. He said, let's get a close-up of those. And the camera zoomed in, and he clapped, and all three of them, Ten of Diamonds, popped out of the 5 points on each one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like
an audible gasp across the theater.
Happened? Yeah, because he said, you know, we were trying to figure out where's he going with this. Like, look at it. Don't show it to anyone else. Don't say anything. I don't want you to think anybody is texting me or I'm getting a signal. And we're like, okay, what now? What's he going to do? And those tens pop up, and the place just jaws dropped. And then they revealed this incredibly beautiful poster that the IBM put together to commemorate David.
Very special poster, very heavy stock. It was probably about 140-pound stock.
110-pound card stock, so it was not thin poster. This was heavy card stock. It had little pictures all around it of the major illusions from all of his TV specials. Mm-hmm. And the night before, when the IBM presented him the plaque, they dubbed him the GOAT, the greatest of all time. And so the poster has his picture. It says, Copperfield, GOAT.
Yeah.
And they, because they're so heavy, you can't fold them. They'll bend, they'll tear. So they provided us tubes to roll these up.
Very large tubes.
Very large ones, yeah, like 3 foot or so. Because this is a big poster. This is not just some little tiny thing. And showed us how to very carefully wrap it so we could send it home. It was an extra expense the IBM wasn't quite prepared for, but they were free. However, if you would donate something...
That still wasn't defraying their costs. That's going to...
No. That's going to the charity for the convention, Abby's Closets. But if you donate $10 at least, we're going to give you a raffle ticket. And David has agreed to take 5 of these posters and autograph them and mail them back to the winners of the drawing. Yeah. So that's cool.
That is pretty cool. Well, thanks, Alan. Yeah, that kind of helps recap what happened there yesterday. This is going to be just another exciting day, I think. It'll be a lot of fun.
This
a lot
is
of things
be
happening.
A lot of fun. We've got more competition today, close-up competition. Mm-hmm. We've got the close-up show coming up. I don't know if that's today or tomorrow. There's a talk this morning by several of the artists that folks might not be all that familiar with, but they're great performers and very different styles and venues that they normally perform in.
So, men and women.
Yep. Oh, yes, men and women. It is so wonderful to see so many women here at the convention that are not just wives or girlfriends. They're magicians. They're performers.
And that was what Jeff McBride and Larry Haas were talking about for the Lance Burton Teen Seminar, that for the first time, it's about equal half and half boys and girls attending
which
the seminar.
Wonderful. Yeah. That's what we need. The locker rooms are going to smell better. But we need to be able to bring in more women into magic because they've got a completely different perspective and view on it. And when you see what they do, you go... Oh, why couldn't I have thought of that? That's so good.
You're right.
Dang.
You're right. Well, Alan, thanks very much. I appreciate it.
You got it, pal. Thank you.
So with the Magic Word Podcast, that was Alan Fisher. Scotty out. We were in the dealer room. Believe it or not, I mean, you don't hear a cacophony behind me of all of the a din of sound from all of the people. That's because it has not yet opened. It was still early morning before the dealers were open, but the first person who you would always see, because he's always got the first booth and he's the first one. If you're on time, you're late. If you're early, you're on time. And that's my buddy right now, Harry Allen. Hey, Harry.
Hey, good morning, Scott.
From Daytona Magic, I should say.
There you go, .com.
So this is always a convention that you have been attending for. It's just like a TAOM and a lot of other conventions, but those are two of the cornerstones of the conventions you always attend.
This month is 57 years of the birth of Daytona Magic.
Wow, congratulations.
Thanks.
And you're getting younger all the time.
Yeah, thank you.
You and Irv both.
There you go. You can't see that. Irv is actually semi-retired.
Okay.
He's still working from home and doing work, but he sold his half to a gentleman named Dan Peterson. So he's my new guy that I'm working with.
Okay.
Of course, you're always going to find Wayne with me at the convention. Wayne is my left and right hand man.
Yeah.
Which is
and there was always a lady, I forgot her name, who was usually
Becky.
Becky
is Irv's daughter, and she's working with him from home.
Okay.
No, with home, not the shop, with home.
Okay.
So she kind of semi-retired with him because that's his daughter.
Yeah.
And she's doing great, but they're still working with the company as well because Irv and I birthed this thing from its birth in 1966. So it's not something you just walk away from it. I mean, you just have so much. It's part of you.
Yes. Did you have any kind of a special anniversary or deck of cards or something for the 50th to celebrate and let your customers kind of celebrate? I mean, aside from probably half-off discount, 50%, whatever.
Yeah.
Did you?
No, we actually didn't. I guess we're just too busy with life and everything. we just really didn't. Yeah. But it is our 20th year of putting on the convention. Mm-hmm. The Daytona Beach Festival of Magic.
Which will be in November?
In November 4, 5, and 6, honoring Gabe Blackstone. Mm-hmm. Yep, and we've got a great talent pool at a nice resort on the ocean, the Plaza Resort and Spa. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the theater shows are in like a Broadway theater each night, Friday and Saturday.
Is that the Gleason Theater, or the Jackie Gleason thing? Was that?
No, that's probably in Miami. This one is the News Journal Center.
Okay.
Yeah, which is great. But a beautiful theater, the balcony, and so on. We like to present the shows for the people that see it in a really nice venue.
Mm-hmm. So here we only have, like, what I say only, about 35 dealers, but we have 500 registrants. So does that seem like about a good mix, you think?
Yeah. I think if you... I just say, you give me a crowd and give me a decent booth, I'll have to work with what I got to work with and let the chips fall where they may. Seriously, that's all you can ask for. And a lot of this stuff's out of your control, how many people, who's going to be buying what. But I always try to bring a variety for everybody. You want mentalism, you want electronic magic, you want state.
You got everything from thumb tips to
exactly right.
Sub-trunks.
So whatever you're into, I can help you. You know what I mean? There's no, can't help you. So whatever we, and what we don't have here, we can ship to you.
Of course. And so what is new or exciting or a big seller today?
The biggest thing is called a legacy system. Hmm. I'm in Las Vegas at Magic Live. Next to me was David Copperfield. And we did a pre-show prior to the dealer's room opening of this item. And I bought all we had after David bought his. So I pretty much the only dealer that has them now. And basically, it's a wallet with a prediction that sits in the front of the audience the whole time.
Okay.
Somebody names three things. We're going to take a trip. You name a place you want to go, a date, and the mode of transportation. When they open the wallet, the paper has that on there.
Okay.
Could be lottery numbers. It's literally, without going into details with secrets, it's almost like a little mini computer in this wallet.
Wow.
Absolutely phenomenal.
You don't touch it. It's not...
That's correct.
Okay.
The spectator can open the wallet and take the paper out. It's fantastic. So that's one of the hottest items out right now. The other one we have is the Back to the Future. Also a really good mentalism effect. And this I also have from Hugo Shelley. There is no more. He sent me the three over from the convention. It's the Insight Pro. Mm-hmm. It's also a great new electronic piece where you could be across the room. Somebody lays one, two, three ESP cards face down. You have the answer. Nobody helping you, no stooges.
You know what cards are down.
Exactly right. Really, really genuine. It's fantastic on how that works. And
the cool one that's going around right now.
Oh, thank you very much. The Sweetener Rabbit. Sold out the first day. I don't know if can show it to you now.
Can you explain it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, come over and explain this.
Come on over, Wayne. This literally, tell him also who has it. All the big guys have this effect.
Copperfield has a set. Jeff McBride has a set. And Lance Burton now has a set. And I'm really happy with it because I invented it. So I got three of the big guys. Yeah. My magic trick.
You don't have to do it. Just explain it.
You take any package of sweetener.
Yeah.
You open it up. You pour it into their hand or your hand.
Yeah.
You take and you pinch it. You rub it around. And all of a sudden, a little rabbit appears in your hand. Every magician should be able to make a rabbit appear. Yeah. And you get all your supplies free at every coffee shop and restaurant in the world.
Is that kind of like the snowman of... that Tim Wise has, you familiar with that? That you have, you pour some salt. He calls it the Salt Man, basically. But you kind of rub the salt in, and then you form this little snowman, out of the salt.
Haven't seen that.
Yeah, it sounds like a kind of a thing in which
I came up with this back in 1971, when I was doing bar magic out in Long Island, and it went into a box. And 2 years ago, I came across it again. I was at dinner with Irv. I ended up doing it for a waitress that we had there.
Yep.
Irv saw it and said, "Where'd that come from?" And we have Goshman making our rabbits for us.
Okay.
And so it's real high quality. And
everybody. So it's not like a 3D printed thing. No.
They're real Goshman sponge ball rabbits. Sponge rabbits.
Very cool. Very neat. And so you sold out, but you're going to be having them available again when?
Taking orders. He has the sample that he's demonstrating from here.
Yeah.
And now we're just sending the people at this point, taking orders on them.
I like that idea. A little of an impromptu kind of a thing, particularly at a restaurant or wherever.
The waitresses go crazy. I don't know how many free desserts I've gotten in restaurants for doing that for a waitress.
Sign me up. Put me on the waiting list. I want to get one. Well, I haven't even seen it yet, but it sounds great.
When you're done, I'll end up doing it in your hand for you.
He'll demonstrate it for you when we're done the interview, for sure, by all means.
Okay.
But now I got to ask you a question. I've been dying to get it. You know what a medium is? Contacts the dead.
Yes.
Imagine what a large can do.
They'll tell you when you're going to die.
There you go. Well, we don't know that, huh?
No, we don't want to know.
No, not at all.
So this has been a great convention. Now, most conventions, of course, you don't get to see the shows or anything like that, but they were closed last night, so you got to see the FISM acts coming up. But I know you guys are pretty much dead tired by the end of the day and tired of talking and everything. It's like, I've seen magic. I don't need to see. But these were FISM competitors. Did you go and see the show last night?
Last night I did not. I had a dinner appointment with business. Saw the first night show.
Yeah.
I can tell you the whole convention has a lot of energy. Mm-hmm. People are here having a really good time. One, because it's the IBM convention. Two, I think because people were pinned up for the last couple of years and they wanted to get out and about. And
three, it's 100th anniversary.
100th anniversary.
And David Copperfield's been, and they got a bunch of giveaway stuff.
So the whole energy, Ken Scott and his crew and everybody around it, Chuck, all the guys, I got Oscar, anybody, all the people involved are just doing a wonderful job. It's like anything, you work hard to make it look easy.
Yeah.
And the energy is just unreal.
It's a lot like you. When you guys are here, I mean, you have high energy. You and Mark Mason are always the two busiest dealers because of the energy. I mean, if you're just sitting behind your booth and waiting for somebody to come by and you start to demo, I mean, I've never seen you sit down. Wayne occasionally, only because he probably beats you to the chair. You know, but,
That's true.
And I'm guessing you're a little bit older than Harry.
Yes,
but
let me tell you, if I'm going to be here, I want to make it worth my while.
Of course.
And the people are here to see us. And you're right. It's whatever the energy that you give out is what comes back to you.
Isn't that the truth about everything?
Performers. Even a performer on stage, if you walk out with a lot of energy, you just feel it. Whether you like or don't like Michael Jackson, when he was on stage, you just felt the electricity of him coming out and doing the dancing and all that stuff. And I look at all those other entertainers, and you can see how they operate and so on. So the answer is absolutely right. People feed off your energy.
You look at Mario, for an example. I don't know if you saw his act the first day or if you've ever seen him perform. Holy moly. I mean, the guy... doesn't stop. I mean, the full 90 minutes or however long his show might be. I mean, we saw, I think, an hour's worth. Mm-hmm. And where he not only is energetic, but he also gets people talking. And it's like, what did I just say? You know, repeat after me. And so, like, every few sentences, I mean, you better be paying attention, you know.
Is that amazing? I love it.
Yeah.
And see, you're talking about it. It must have made an impression on you.
Oh,
and that's if an entertainer, right? Or if you're in business, you want people to talk obviously good about you.
Yeah. Well, we're going to be having Mario at the our TOM convention next year in 23 in Houston, which, of course, you're going to be dealer number one come and join us, of course. But then we'll be having, we're having that over Labor Day weekend in 23.
That is excellent. Yeah. TOM is like my back room, my neighbor. I love being there. Just like, you know. One of my favorite conventions.
Thank you.
It really is.
Well, listen, thank you guys both very much for chatting with us, and I'm glad to hear what's kind of new and what's happening. I know that everyone's always curious of what's in the dealer's room, and there are some other people, obviously, who have their own individual types of things, like Dark Cabaret, and I know some others who only have their own proprietary things that they don't sell outside of the booth or outside of their own website. But, you were just one of your plenipotentiary, I think, of magic. You know, you got everything. You kind of, I say, back. And clean up. I mean, you got everything.
we try. I mean, again, if somebody, whatever somebody's into, we'll be happy to help them. I won't sell anything to anybody that's not for them. Literally, it could be $1,000, and if it's not for them, I'll say, you know what, let's get something else.
Yeah.
And that's after the 57 years, people want to come back to you because of that. And that's what's it, friendships, you know. And
you want to build friendships because you like to have people come back. You got to feed the snake.
Well, I see the people in person at the conventions. They call me on the phones. You can sell anytime, one time to a person. But the trick is repeat, get them come back to you.
Right.
And I do when I shop, not even magic. I want somebody that helps me properly so I can come back to them and they're my go-to people.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Well, I had heard talking with... Williams Magic. What was his name? Emery Williams?
Yeah.
I think, yeah. He was telling me once about his shop, and he said the one trick he doesn't sell to beginners is the invisible deck because it's too good of a trick. If they get that, that's the ultimate trick. They'll never come back. That is something you get later, mm-hmm. and you know that.
Oh, yeah. No, that's funny, isn't it? I always like to qualify the customer if they don't qualify themselves. What's your goal? Are you doing just for friends? You want to do shows? Instead of just saying, here's a trick for you.
Yeah. You sound like Larry Haas. I just did an episode recorded with him about the mystery school, and he was saying one of the things in school they always ask is, this is something Eugene Berger always said, who is your audience? Mm-hmm. For whom are you performing? What do you want to be? Not necessarily be, but who do you want to perform for?
What's your ultimate goal, right?
Sure. Yeah.
What are you trying? That's why I asked people, what are you trying to accomplish? And then that way you can...
Is it for YouTube or is it what? Yeah.
Exactly right. And that way you can fit them into what they want to do. And not just, here's a trick.
Yeah.
And so on.
Yeah.
And most a lot of times people qualify themselves. They say, hey, I want to do some magic for my grandkids, or I'm putting on a show, whatever.
Yeah.
And that way we can sort them out properly.
Yeah, exactly. Harry, Wayne, thank you guys very much. Appreciate
it. Are you kidding? Without seeing you, it wouldn't be a great convention, my friend.
You're awesome. You're flattered. Thank you very much. It's over the Magic Word Podcast from the Dealer's Room. Everybody, all together. There we go. Yeah, that's right. That was Harry Allen and Wayne from DaytonaMagic.com. Scotty out. We are... still in the dealer's room over here, and one of the guys who has things available at one of the dealer's tables is somebody actually from Atlanta and whose voice you have not heard on this podcast. And I'm coming up on 700 episodes, and it's like, why not? Because this guy has been there, done that, and is a good friend of mine since 1980. He lives here in Atlanta, Georgia. Please welcome none other than the famous David Ginn. Hey there, David.
Hey, I am David Ginn, but I don't consider myself famous. let me tell you the difference between famous. I'm partly famous.
Okay.
When you're famous, you cannot go into the grocery store and buy a quart of milk and a loaf of bread. You know, they won't let you. They want to take you home to dinner.
Yeah.
So partly famous means that you can go in there in your shorts and T-shirt and nobody will bother you. However,
they'll take your money.
I was actually in the Army with a fellow who was on a TV show. You probably heard of Silver Spoons, maybe 30, 40 years ago, with Joel Higgins and Ricky Schroeder. Mm-hmm. And Joel was the co-star of the show. And Joel told me later, because we were in the Army together, he came to see me when I worked at the Magic Castle one time. He had grown a beard when he came to the castle. I said, "What's the beard all about? You don't have that on the TV show." He said, "When we're not filming, I've got to grow a beard so I can go into the grocery store and buy milk and bread and take it home for my wife and me to eat." And he says, "Before that, I literally had people come up to me and invite me home for dinner and, you know, want to talk to me for the next hour or two, you know." And he said, "I had to grow a beard to put on the disguise." So I've always joked that I'm partly famous. It's better than being famous.
You know, my late wife, Kathy, was a dental hygienist. And when we lived in Oklahoma, in Tulsa, she had interviewed at Oral Roberts University to perhaps teach dental hygiene. They needed a hygiene teacher. And they told her what the salary was, and she kind of laughed. And they said, "Well, but you get the ability to say, hey, that you work for Oral Roberts." And she said, "Well, that helped pay for my groceries. When I go to the store, I tell them I work at Oral Roberts. They'll give me free groceries." And they said, "That's the end of the interview." So
yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah,
so,
right.
Yeah.
Well, what do you want to know today?
I would like to know, since you are here in Atlanta, you've been at this convention. You haven't really attended a lot of conventions. I don't see you as often. You used to be lecturing around and doing kid shows and having all the books. I mean, you've written, what, 13, 14 books?
100.
Okay.
Actually, and I count the DVDs because you don't realize it. A DVD takes planning, writing, scripting, and so it's like a book. Mm-hmm. Granted, it's easier, but the Kids Show Magic Compendium that came out 5 years ago, this huge volume.
Is that actually just a reprint of all the books combined?
No. I tried to put that in my ads. It is not a reprint. It's 95% new material, but it's a compendium of all these things that I've done and written, some published in magazines, some very obscure magazines, and then I started adding new material to it, so it's really 95% new material. And I'm following it up with a new book called Children Love Animals, same format, the big, heavy size. Anyway, that's another story.
Literally.
But my what is my point? Where were
you? Talk about 100 books that you've written or so. So
yeah, I mean,
but
you
that's
do them one at a time, you know. And most of my things that I've written are based on experience from performing school shows, libraries, and church preschools.
You're the New Age Bobo, wouldn't you say?
The New Age Bobo?
You know, from the standpoint, he did kid shows and
school
shows.
Oh, he did wonderful kid shows, and I knew Bobo. And he had a great book that he finally put out that Magic Incorporated, Francis Marshall, put out.
It's the Bible of coin books.
And well, I don't mean the coin book. I mean, that's one thing. But I'm talking about the Bobo Magic Show was basically all of his school show routines and great stuff. I met John Booth back in my 96 at the Magic Castle, and we sat down and had a talk. And by that time, I'd probably written 20 books, 96. Oh, I'd written 50 books by that time. And some of them have been bestsellers, Professional Magic for Children, Children Laugh Louder, Kid Biz.
Got them all.
Anyway, the point of that is that I said to John Booth, I said, "I got your book, Marvels of Mystery, when I was about 16, 17 years old, and that became my Bible. Mm-hmm. I read every routine over and over. I used some of the routines, some of the philosophy, and I used some of my earliest publicity material came out of his book, Forging Ahead in Magic, which is on the business side of magic. Well, I said to him, the truth is, my first book, Colorful Magic, was my version of Marvel's a mystery because it was all from experience of doing shows in Atlanta and TV and live shows, every kind of show, convention, banquet, wedding, reception, just every kind of thing. So he was my inspiration in many ways. And, of course, I've had, you know, many others. I've talked about in my books, Harold Taylor, how much he affected me, and my friendship with Doug Henning from the time that we were teenagers. Some of you may have read that series I wrote for the Lincoln Wing about the trip that Doug and I did as college students all around Europe. So I've been fortunate to meet a lot of nice people. I mean, I met Fantasio when he won all those awards back in 68, and I went back and congratulate him, I'll ask him some question about some magic thing, and he says, I see that you've written a couple of books. I said, yeah, I had two books out. He said, why don't you write a book about my canes and kennels?
Well, that's right.
He says, I'm not a writer. You're a writer. So that led to a friendship, and I wrote six Cane and Candle books for him. And, you know, that's just an example of how I met a lot of nice people. I sat at Abbott's one time and ate hot dogs and drank Coke with Carol Fox, and we didn't talk magic. My wife was pregnant with our first and only child. And
what's her name, Crystal?
Autumn.
Autumn, of course.
Yep,
yeah.
Autumn, season of the year.
Yeah.
And Carol sat there and told me how much my life was going to change when I had my own child. He had two boys, and of course he was right. You know, some people thought that I knew a lot when I wrote Professional Magic with Children, which came out in 76. Well, our daughter was born in 78. From 78 forward, I learned a whole lot more about children, about having by having a child right there in my own home, and we've had a whole lot of fun over these years.
Well, many of those books have been influential to so many people, and me and most magicians, it seems like, get started working with children's shows, as I did, and many things I have done from the books, particularly like Boy Scout, cut a short kerchief, and different kinds of things we've done. But some of the things I have applied to adult shows and corporate shows that will work as well. And I think people overlook the fact, thinking, okay, well, I'm going to poo-poo that because I am a trade show guy or I work for corporations, so I don't need a children's show book. No, I think there are a lot of techniques because there is a childlike in everyone, regardless of age, and that you can adapt some of these kinds of things. And again, in particular, there was a silk trick that you had taught that I still use to this day that was in one of the books. But.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that. I worked at a convention 15 years ago with Doc Eason, who is a Colorado?
A bar magician, in Aspen.
But he's a bar magician. He's a close-up, work behind the bar, kind of like Tom Mullica did it at the Tomfoolery. And Doc Eason said to me, he says, I'm doing a demo tonight, a sort of a performance for the conventioners to see. It's 6 o'clock at the bar here in the lobby. And I hope you'll get a chance to see it because I'm going to do one of your kids' show bits. I said, really? He said, you just wait and see. So I watched his performance, and it was fine. And I forgot how he worked it in, but he did my ABCs backwards bit, which is to tell the kids you're going to do the ABCs backwards, but then you turn your back on the audience, and you go A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and you turn back around, and, oh, I'm kidding. And then you say, If I try to do that for real, I'd get tongue-tied, butterflies in my stomach. There's no way in the world that I could say ZYXWVUTSRQPLNMAKJISGFEDCBA. I wouldn't even try. Don't even. And the kid's going, you just did it. You just did it.
You said, what?
Well, Doc Eason did that at his
bar
and that opened up my eyes that, yes, you can take bits and transfer them to other places.
Right.
I mean, I'm not a person who would ever work a bar show.
But there was a particular, and then I'll let you go, a particular trick that had to do with silks, in which it was a 20th century silk, basically, and it was a running gag in saying, you start to tie it, then the knot comes untied. Oh, well, that trick doesn't work.
And I had a hook line that said, what was the hook line?
It's been a while since I've done this also.
It's not a very good trick.
It's not a very good trick. And then put it
every
down.
Time I'd say it, but by the third time, the kids are going, it's not a very good trick.
Yeah.
And then the last time, I switched one of the silks for a silk loaded, kind of like 20th century, loaded with a 36-inch Happy Birthday, The End, whatever the show is, pick up that and tie it and do it, you know, one, two, three, and then pull them apart, and here's a 36-inch silk. If it's at a birthday, it says happy birthday.
Yeah.
And
because I had, again, been doing that. I remember I was working the Magic Island one time, and I had two volunteers. I had a male and a female that, who didn't know each other. It was a drinking crowd that evening, and it's important because I also was doing that particular trick as a running gag along with a Lotto Bowl, Magic mm-hmm. Water from Zanzibar. Mm-hmm. So I had a guy come up, and so then this girl, as I was talking, the guy was picking up the handkerchiefs and starting to, you know, try to tie them, and I said, wait, you know, I go back over and I say, no, don't mess with that. And then this girl started undressing. She was like taking, you know, unbuttoning her top, like, wait, no, this is not that kind of a show. I know this is a drinking crowd and it's an adult show tonight. You know, put that back. And then the guy started messing around with my Lotto Bowl and started pouring. I said, no, stop doing that. And then she was starting to take off her clothes again. It was the funniest thing back and forth. It's one of those things I wish I could recreate, but he was messing with my silks and my, and this, and she was trying to take off her clothes, and there was hilarity ensued.
Did she get the clothes off?
No, I got through the show and finally... Everybody said, man.
I have not worked a whole lot of nightclub situations. I did one in the Bahamas for 3 weeks once for Fantasio, two shows a night. I mean, I'm a morning person. I don't like finishing my second show at 1:15 in the morning. Uh-huh. But I remember doing some kind of a club, a drinking type club in Atlanta, back in the 70s. And besides doing the sub trunk there, I did, with an audience volunteer, I went ahead and did Dissecto.
Yeah,
and just the same routine I do right out of Professional Magic for Children, did Dissecto, and with a girl, and she was probably 25.
Yeah.
I finished chopping off her arm, wrapped a towel around her, unwrapped it. Her arm is fine, held her arm up, her hand, you know, give her a round of applause, and they applauded,
yeah.
And she turned and said, thank you, and she leaned over and kissed me on the cheek.
Yeah.
What that was all about, I don't know. And then she walked off, and I thought... This is not my kind of show. This is not...
You know, I think I'm done with these kinds of shows.
I mean,
yeah.
I've had children do things like this. You know, let's say I'm here. I've had this happen many times. I'm standing here, and I've done a show for, say, 200 second graders sitting on the floor. I'm on the same level. The show is over, and they start marching them out, you know.
Yeah.
And I've turned on some exit music, you know, some popular music. And I've had kids break out of their line, and it can be a girl or a boy, since it's not gender specific, break out of the line and run over to me and give me a hug. You know, they're only about this high, but they give me a hug, trying to tell me how much they like the show.
That's great.
And
it's a good feeling.
I had a similar situation, but this is a one only. I went to a school 2 days in a row. No, it wasn't 2 days in a row. It was Tuesday, Thursday. So I did a 9 o'clock show, let's say for the first grade on Tuesday morning. 2 days later, I'm back at the school at 9 o'clock for 9 o'clock for the second grade.
Yeah.
And I think I was doing two different shows. So I did show number one, everything's fine. 2 days later, I'm in the school cafeteria at 8 o'clock setting up, and kids come in to eat their breakfast in this school. You know, I don't know, free breakfast or whatever. And I'm over here just setting up my stuff, and here are the first graders or whatever early arrivals, and they've seen me 2 days ago, and several of them ran over and just hugged me and thanked me for the show, mm-hmm. and I said, well, thank you. Let me get set up for the second grade, and just a good feeling.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Well, listen, it's good to see you over here, and I know you're enjoying the convention, and you got a part in the convention as well, aren't
you? I lectured Tuesday night. I was the early bird.
Well, I missed the one. Okay, I didn't get here.
Yeah, early bird lecture. And I said to my wife, I said, early bird lecture, people not quite here yet. Right. I hope I have 20 people, 30 people.
How many were here?
About 110.
Oh, my goodness.
And one of the guys told me, he said, you had 95% of the people who were physically at the convention by then. They were all there. And
yeah.
That turned into a lot of goodwill. It was funny to me to look out there, and I saw Raphael, my friend from Belgium. He's lecturing. He's
performing
on the Saturday Night Show.
Yeah.
I think he's the MC. And then Mario, the Maker Magician, whom I met 5 years ago, but we've never seen each other work, I don't think.
Yeah.
So I got...
You got to see him.
I got his
day.
Daughter to come up and help me in the show. Yeah. She did a great job. And then the next day, I got to see him do a show, and I'm going like, wow, this is like he's read every kid's show book I've ever written, because he's doing this and this and this, but he's doing it with his own personality.
Yeah.
and with a lot more energy than you and I ever had.
Yeah. Combined.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, a pleasure talking to you. Good to see you.
And with you, David, and that hopefully if there's a possibility we might be able to get together to do an episode. So the kinds of things we were just discussing then right now, the listeners will get to hear more in depth at a later time. So, David, thank you again much
for
the Magic
Scott.
Word Podcast. That was David Ginn.
Scotty out.
Right now, we are in the lobby. There's an event going on right now, but I keep running into friends when it's a little bit quiet and have an opportunity to chat. And here's Rick Heath, who was formerly with the, he was with the former Le Grand David show and now full-time artist, Rick Heath. Yeah. Hey, Rick.
Good morning, Scott.
It was always good to see you. And some years ago, you were the speaker for the Merlin Breakfast, which we're going to be having tomorrow morning, and we're going to be having Stuart McDonald talk about his journey to FISM and everything. But you are still continuing to work and to paint, and what are you doing exactly?
Well, let me preface.
Artist with a paintbrush, is that what it is?
Artist, magician with a paintbrush is the website and the sole proprietorship which I operate under. And let me preface this by saying that as of this year, it's been 10 years since we, the Le Grand David Company, performed Cesario, Marco the Magi Died, on March 24th, 2012. Our last performance was on May 27th, 2012. Those dates are etched in my memory.
Sure. And because you were with the troupe for how long?
35 years, and even before
that,
our first show was February 20th, 1977, but Cesario, Marco, had been collecting people several years before that, so we were friends by the time we got on stage.
You were more than friends. You guys were family.
Yeah, the way I put it is a family of friends. Mm-hmm. And so kind of prefacing it with that, it just seems amazing that it's been 10 years since the final curtain came down on the Le Grand David.
Once it was done, did you realize the importance? Of course, while you were doing it, I mean, sometimes people don't realize the impact on history that you're making, but it seems like that Cesario was always saying, we are history, we're doing something.
Cesario understood it was an era in magic, and
it could not be recreated.
You would have to have a Cesario, you would have to have two theaters, antique theaters in a small town, and a dedicated group of people, some on a staff, some volunteers, to make this all happen. But he would say something very important, in my estimation. I or David or somebody might come to him and say, Cesario, let me tell you about that. He would say, write it down.
Really?
Write it down. I mean, yeah, he wanted to hear it, but he also meant record it. And one of the things that kind of gets me sometimes is like in this convention, you see people who are older that may have a wealth of experience that nobody even knows about.
That's why I'm trying to talk to these people.
and you are doing it. Mm-hmm. You're recording it. And, back 40 years ago, he would say, write it down. Mm-hmm. But now, record it. Mm-hmm. Get it, what's the word I'm looking for?
Archived.
Archived, yeah. Mm-hmm. Get it in a format. So all that being said, what I'm doing now, not on a theatrical scale, but building, painting, restoring apparatus, illusions for magicians, collectors. And I've been very fortunate that even during the pandemic, people have been sending things my way and entrusting me with creating things for them or asking me to, restore things, do original artwork. It's been pretty amazing, and I know when everything came to a screeching halt a couple of years ago.
Did it? Because I was wondering about that, because specifically you're working out of your house, and so why would that slow down for you?
It didn't.
Oh.
But for the performing magician...
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah, everything came to a screeching halt. But I felt very fortunate that the people that I work with and for, and it's a collaborative effort. I mean, the basis of it is, we're forming a friendship. We're working on this together. I want input from the people that I'm working with that have entrusted me with things. And let's have fun doing it. And the way I operate, and this is true, I say to people, if you're not 100% satisfied, 110% satisfied, I would rather have a friend than a check. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't want to come to a convention like this and see somebody over there, so to speak,
who is dissatisfied with my ear,
and feel like I've got to go... hide behind a pillar, you know, in the opposite direction. No, you know, I'm serious. Sure. Yeah. I would much rather have a friend than a check.
Yeah.
And for me, coming here after, what, 2-3 years? When was the last one?
We had in 2019, I believe. Yeah, Scottsdale.
Scottsdale. So after 3 years, mm-hmm. reconnecting with people.
Yeah, as if nothing had passed, because we're still friends and picking
same.
Up conversation where we left off.
Where we left off.
Yeah.
And to me, it's the friendships, it's mm-hmm. the reconnecting, meeting new people. I've met people that I've only heard about. And
I always loved that whenever Cesario was there, and David would be with him, you know, with a wheelchair or something.
Yeah.
I remember you or David coming over and said, Scott, Cesario would like to see you. And I go over, and it's like, that was so special, because he wanted to reconnect with friends every year when he would see people. You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and, you know, I was talking with somebody yesterday, and, you know, Cesario, and after he had a stroke in 2005 for the last 7 years of our run, he was in a wheelchair for the most part. Mm-hmm. I mean, he did make brief appearances on stage, but he would be in the wings, and he would be sitting there and just really quiet and everything. And then at the finale, you know, the final curtain call, David would wheel him out in the wheelchair. Mm-hmm. Cesario would just, like, light up, like, hey!
Yeah.
You know, everybody would, sure. would yeah. be clapping. I mean, it was like the performer just came to life.
Yeah.
You know, and
rejuvenated him.
Yeah. Rejuvenated
him. Gave him new life.
And he lived long enough, I think he realized his purpose on Earth was fulfilled when he saw 35 complete years of performances.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, shortly after that, February 20th, 2012, I believe, was the 35th anniversary performance. Mm-hmm. And I think his mission was complete. You know,
yeah.
he saw 35 years. And then that summer, David had been talking with people, and we decided we did our thing. We did it well, maybe not perfectly. We did it well. It's like, that's it.
Let history judge.
Let history judge. Mm-hmm. And I'll throw this in. For me personally, Cesario talked about beauty. He said at one point, it was at the Order of Merlin breakfast at the Miami IBM convention, 2010 maybe. He said, when we go, I think it was 2000. I don't know exactly what, 2006.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Yeah. So he said, when we go on stage to do magic, we go to do beauty. That's why we're on stage, to do beauty. And that always resonated with me because, yeah, I just love beauty, and beauty and magic, or beauty and anything. Well, anyhow, the point is, there would be times I'd say to Cesario, are our shows better than Fu Manchu's? Are they more beautiful than Fu Manchu's? Cesario would go, well, I don't know. And he'd drive me freaking crazy. You know, he knew I'd keep going for another 10 years.
Yeah.
He wouldn't
yeah.
give me a straight answer. But anyhow.
The word that I always associate with Cesario is enchantment.
Enchantment.
That was the word that he used that just, every time I hear that, I think of the troupe.
I think that's, you know, you got beauty, goodness, enchantment, creating a world of wonder or fantasy or whatever. And I think for me that's really it. I think magic sometimes, personal opinion, but I think sometimes magic becomes too means-oriented, mm-hmm. like the technical part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and practice it forever. Practice it yeah. the right way so you just don't develop bad habits
that's
by practicing.
Point.
But practice it the right way. Develop the technical
good
skills.
Advice. Mm-hmm.
But if it's just the means, like, oh, yeah, I mean, you know, all the means are there, wonderful, you need that,
yeah.
but is it beautiful?
Mm-hmm.
Does it entertain people?
Right.
You know,
right.
Eric Tate last night.
Beautiful.
I was totally
the heck
enchanted
out of me.
By
yeah.
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He got me. I was right there with him. I mean, mm-hmm. it was, yeah, the means are there, the technical aspect is mm-hmm. there. I mean, the guy is... He's tremendous. I saw him, in Scottsdale 2-3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, he won close-up, I believe.
I believe you're right, yes.
And, but the way he... I don't remember him doing it, the three-card Monty, exactly like that.
No, he's changed it. We were talking about this beforehand. I've got an episode coming up
oh, good.
With him, and he talked about having to change this for FISM.
But the means are there. Mm-hmm. But he does it in such a beautiful way, such an entertaining, enchanting way, mm-hmm. you know, involving the volunteers, and he's so smooth with it.
Yes.
Wow. I mean, to me, that was, you know, I say to myself, man, that's it. You know, that's what I come for.
Yep.
And I want to see, just to let you go, but I want every performance, every performer to give me, not just me, everybody. I want to see the greatest magic performance ever. Mm-hmm. you know, you probably won't. But that's what I want.
It's a goal.
It's a goal for everybody. That we sit there and go, wow. Like, yeah. Wow. It's like, my God. The guy who did, I don't know his name, but who did the, he ended with Forrest Gump with the...
Oh, that was Ed
cups,
Ripley.
The yeah. cup, the cups and balls. Mm-hmm. I was very touched emotionally at the end.
Yeah.
It got me. You know, and I'm saying to myself, wow.
Peaks and valleys. I said valleys, but he had peaks and plateaus because you're right. He was hitting your emotion. It was funny. It was fun. It was touching.
And everything tied in is an artistic whole. You know, so those are the kinds of things I say, my God, I mean, you know, when magicians deliver performances like that, that's beautiful. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of what I live for.
Yeah, that whole evening, I think, last night was great. And it showed the different styles. It's going to be hard to judge, I think, at FISM when you're going to be seeing different people like that.
Yeah.
And there are a couple people who are going to be on the show tomorrow night who are finalists in the contest
yeah.
who are going to give a run for the money in FISM, I think, also. I'm a judge, and I can't say more than that. But
no, but Juliana Chen bringing, you know, her people.
Did you see the show?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, mind-boggling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, I mean, it's technical perfection and it's artistic. It's visually beautiful. You know, I'm not sure, and I was talking with her, I'm not sure I understand the legend. She's like a legend behind it. I'm not sure I understand that. But wow. No, I think that's when magic truly becomes. So we were having our auction after the Larkham Theater, before we sold the Larkham Theater. We needed to auction stuff. Everything had to go.
Mm-hmm.
So my cell phone number was the contact number for people who were inquiring about items that, you know, going to be selling. So
yeah.
this kid, so to speak, everybody's a kid, this kid, a self-appointed expert, you know, what about this, what about that? And he's asking about, I believe it was the Dakota chair. And he ends by saying, so, is this trick effective?
Wow.
My response was, only if you make it so. I don't know where those words came. Only if you make it so. And I think that is the criteria for me. It's like our
Cesario job. Was speaking through you.
Only if you make it so. Is something is magic an art?
Mm-hmm.
Only if you make it so.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, the Congress can issue a proclamation or whatever or put their imprimatur on it. It's only if you make it so. And, you know, and some of the people here, man, they last night they made it an art. You know, it was
yeah.
an art form.
Yeah.
But that's for me. You know, it's like only if you make it so.
That's great. Anyhow,
I'll let you go on to the next one.
Good to leave it. Yeah, I've
sorry got, to ramble so much.
No, that's good rambling. That was excellent. Thank you very much, Rick.
Yeah.
It's always good catching up with
you. Well,
it's
always good to catch up with you. You know, this is fun for me. Unexpected. I texted a friend this morning. I said the best times at the convention are those that are unexpected. Spontaneous. So this was great.
It gives an opportunity to get together for these
yeah.
unexpectations.
I'll
unexpectations.
You
bet, Rick.
Thanks,
best
Scott.
To you.
Yeah,
so with Magic Bird Podcast, that was Rick Heath. I am now with the president, or should I say past international president. What is official over here? This is Ken Scott. Hey, Ken.
How are you, Scott?
Fantastic. And it's good to see you. And for those of you who are listening and remember, Ken, we go way, way back, in which that before this the Magic Word ever began, Ken and I were doing convention reports for Dodd Vickers over for Magic
yeah.
Newswire.
Dodd Vickers, yes. And look at you now.
That's right. Look at both of us now. President and some other guy.
I'm now a PIP.
You're a PIP. Now you're past international president. Exactly. So you're going to be able to take a breath now and kind of be an advisor capacity.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I'll finish up this convention and we'll finish up tomorrow night. This is Friday. But I thought it was going to be pretty well. And yeah, so I'll get to step down and which is good, because mm-hmm. 1 year is enough, I think.
What was it like as the year coming out? I mean, to begin with, Alexander was during COVID, and you were kind of getting into
Steven.
It. And so,
you missed
and
Steven.
Steve Bagazzi, then also. But both of which kind of didn't really get a
right.
tour of the world the way that most international presidents do.
And basically, mine was just in the U.S. I didn't get a chance to go abroad because of the travel. So it was different. We had to still work on stuff that was virtual because a lot of clubs didn't start meeting until back in January, February of this year. So it flew by. This whole year flew by, but I think we still were able to connect with smaller groups as opposed to bigger groups.
Like, has membership remained the same, or during COVID did it grow?
It dropped, but it is back on the upslope again. So that's good. So it is back up a little bit.
That's good. Well, as far as this convention goes, you guys have put together a great one, and I understand that kudos in large part for having David Copperfield goes to you.
Well,
Sean Farquhar was saying even.
Yeah. Good. It was always said that we probably couldn't get him because SAM's always had him and stuff, but so I approached it, and they said they would consider it, and so it took a while to tell them what we thought what we were going to do, and then we wanted to surprise David. We got a poster made for everyone here, and I think he was legitimately surprised because to keep secrets from David when Chris is involved is kind of tough. So
yeah.
I think he was really moved, and
he did appear moved. Yeah. I mean, that was live Zoom.
Yeah,
we were watching
live Zoom. Yeah, and so I think he enjoyed it. So I think if we could have had him here, that'd been the next best thing. But we got him here live.
Oh, I thought that was great. Yeah, through the Zoom and on the big IMAGs there, so we could also watch it.
Yeah. So, but yeah.
Aside from having him here, what's been one of the biggest challenges over here of trying to put on this convention?
Probably just the, because we're working in a smaller place. When we booked this place, Stephen Bergazzi and I booked this, we didn't know what COVID would look like coming out of COVID. So we booked a smaller, more conservative hotel than we would have.
Limited it to 500.
Well, we couldn't sell more than 500. So it was the scope of the hotel really was our challenge. Now, I think we're coming down to, because everything's in the ballroom. So if you look at that one room, it's used the entire day.
That's a good point.
So nothing else is used but that ballroom. So it's a tough...
Lectures and everything.
Everything. So that's a problem. That means your tech crew starts at 7 in the morning, doesn't end until 11:30 at night.
They don't get the appreciation they really deserve.
Right.
For a volunteer group.
Because, typically we're in a theater somewhere at night, and the ballroom's not being used. So, yeah. So it's... us trying to get a hold of another room. So, hey, we booked what we could.
Well, it's been very good. Good hotel and good vibe, good energy. I've been hearing a lot of people who've been saying that very thing about how much fun that they've been having this whole time, where they have been learning stuff and having great talent, good lectures, good variety, also diversity from the standpoint of having men and women magicians as well as the youth, and talking with Jeff McBride and Lance Burton saying we now have like 50-50 boys and girls who are attending the youth event.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing but positive things I've been hearing about all of this.
Well, the idea I think we wanted to do behind this convention was reunite everybody because it's been 2 years. So that's why we're not having really late-night lectures. We're having late-night jams.
Yeah.
And just people just getting together and hanging out. And because I think we've all had enough lectures, at least virtually, in the last 2 years. But we really wanted to have just a time where people can reconnect and meet new people and hang out. And with our gifts this year that we're doing, you didn't get all the gifts at one time like you typically do when you check in. So you're getting gifts and surprise gifts, so you don't know what the gifts are.
I know that Sean had said, the one we get tonight, let me just say, he said, wait till you get the one tomorrow night. It's going to be really surprising. It's going to be great. I mean, each one, we had the cards, then we had this wonderful poster. I don't know what it is, and I don't want to know. I want to be surprised at everybody else. But it's supposed to be pretty cool.
It is very cool. He is right. And we may do it tonight. I don't know. We could flip-flop on things.
Okay.
Or it could be tonight.
Okay.
Well, on Friday. We might do it tonight. We don't know.
So we got the banquet this evening, and then Steve Bergazzi is going to be...
He'll be the banquet performer, and then he and I are doing a Carl Fox, Ab Dixon bit. So ever since...
You're not going to shuffle cake, are you?
No, God, no. But we try to work together when we can because we enjoy that stuff. So, tonight, and then we got the show afterwards.
Yeah, so, and then tomorrow morning will be the Merlin Breakfast.
Merlin Breakfast, in fact, will be in the... That's another problem we got here. We're using the atrium as our food place. There's not really we've taken both ballrooms, one for the dealer room, one for the theater. So our dinner and our Merlins are going to be out here in this banquet.
Which is kind of a session room.
Yeah, it's kind of a session room. Yeah. Right. So we're going to have... This is going to be transformed tonight into a banquet place.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Now, I haven't been to a jam yet. I'm assuming the jam doesn't take place here officially, or is it actually over in the lobby where the bar area...
It's wherever you want it to be.
Okay.
It's basically... It's very informal. People getting together. I saw people last night over here doing cards. I saw people at the bar last night doing cards. I saw a group over here. Just wherever the jam takes place. And it may not necessarily be about magic. It may just be about life and, you know.
My room overlooks the bar, and so it's very noisy until like 3 or 4 in the morning. So I know they're jamming out there.
We've had a problem with the bar. The bar has been closing early.
At midnight.
Yeah, and we know us magicians. We want the bar to be open until at least 6 in the morning.
Yeah.
So, So we're gonna,
they're losing revenue.
They're losing revenue. I told them I'd get behind the bar if I could sell my booze.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Ken, you've done a great job.
job this past year. Congratulations on a good year, and congratulations on a successful convention. You and your crew, I know it's not a one-man job. Everybody is to be congratulated, so congratulations to all of you guys.
Chuck Martin and Oscar Munoz.
Bob Patterson.
The whole crew, yeah. If you look around, and there's just Mike Dunnigan, there's just... You keep looking around, there's a number of people that had their hands in this, and it's very appreciative. So,
well, thank you very much for putting us on, and good talking to you.
All right, buddy.
So with the Magic Word Podcast. That was Ken Scott. Scotty out.
One of the performers who we are going to be seeing later this evening is David Goldrake, and David is with me right now. So, hello, David.
Hello, Scott.
And so you have, did you pack up your stuff from Vegas to drive out here straight just for this? So?
I did do that. Okay. I flew in from Europe Sunday, I packed Monday morning, and then I drove straight to Atlanta.
Well, and so this is one of the first conventions you've attended and performed? Or
It's one of the few ones I've performed, or I'm going to perform at, yes.
Where are you coming next?
I don't know. I mean, I'm going to tour.
Magic conventions, at least.
Yeah, I have no conventions planned. I rarely do conventions. I performed at 3 conventions so far.
Wow.
So this is my 4th, and I'm looking forward to that.
Have you had fun so far, as far as the participation, the people you've seen or met, and the shows you've seen, lectures, et cetera?
I actually have. I have reconnected with some old friends. Mm-hmm. I have met new people that are potentially new friends, and I've enjoyed a lot of the lectures, performances, so it's a fun event.
Yeah. And so, as you said, hopefully there might be some other conventions that you might be going to, and conventions are always looking for illusionist, so perhaps they should get in contact with you.
We shall see.
How do they contact you if somebody did want to book an illusionist for their convention?
Absolutely. Yeah, Sean Farquhar contacted me telling me that he wanted to book me, and I was very excited because it's the IBM. It's the centennial.
Yeah.
They're honoring David Copperfield, one of my youth heroes. Mm-hmm. So everything kind of came together, and I'm really excited to be here.
Are you going to be lecturing also or just performing?
I'm doing a talk tomorrow morning.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm doing a 15 minutes talk, and we're actually trying to change the concept now. It's a spontaneous decision that Eric Tate and I made last night.
Okay.
So we may turn it into an interview.
Is it, because Eric is a podcaster like me.
Absolutely,
and so,
yes.
So he will be asking some questions, I guess. Is he the one kind of coordinating the whole thing?
No, not at all. It was a spontaneous thing. I met Eric last night, literally, and we were talking about my condition, which is synesthesia, that I wanted to talk about. Mm-hmm. And there are some performers and other people who have that condition that is a great, I would say, asset for a performer, especially as a magician, which is music, sound, lights, and everything. And Eric said, would you like to do an interview rather than a speech? And I'm like, this could be a great approach. So we may do that. We're not sure yet, but yeah, we may change.
So there are the people who are going to be on the talk tomorrow. It's not just you.
And no, there's going to be 2 more people tomorrow.
Okay.
Yes.
Good. So that is a little bit different, because you're not going to be talking about illusions or touring or how to do tricks. You're actually going to be talking about yourself.
Kind of, but I've noticed in our community there's a lot of people who have different personality, let's call them disorders, that are seen as a handicap by most people or as a challenge. Mm-hmm. And I've realized through my own personal experience that they can be used to our advantage. Mm-hmm. And that's actually what I wanted to talk about, how to use a potential disadvantage and turn it into an advantage and making the best out of it and being great at it.
There are some people who have autism who make great magicians,
yes.
And there are a couple of them in the contest, in fact, here just who made it to the finals.
I saw a performer, and the moment he came on stage, because I'm on the spectrum, I realized he's on the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
He was my favorite.
Yeah.
The timing, the delivery, everything, I was like, fantastic. And then I spoke to some of his peers, the teenagers, and they're like, some of them were like, well, he's not really that accepted, people don't get him. I'm like, of course they don't get him, but you should be aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fascinating. Yeah. So I would like to talk about that, because we also have great names in our industry.
Okay.
And they're on the spectrum, and mm-hmm. and they've used it to their absolute advantage and become stars.
Yeah, we have mutual friends. I know who you're talking about, some of them at least. So that'd be great. Well, looking forward to that tonight as well as tomorrow morning. And I'm glad that you're here, and hoping that you're going to be able to be seen at future magic conventions as well. This could be a whole new thing for you.
Time will tell.
Okay. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was David Goldrake. This is Scotty out. Speaking of people who are
competitors or are going to be competitors coming up in FISM. We have someone who has taken a journey, and he's going to talk about that at the Merlin Breakfast tomorrow, Stuart McDonald. Hey there, Stuart.
Hi. How's it going, Scott?
Fantastic. It's always good to see you. And congratulations on, I saw the act last night that you were doing. Congratulations on making it even better, if possible. I'd like the change in music and kind of add a few little ghost sounds and some other things, and it's got a little bit different kind of a feel to it. It's still eerie and spooky, and the drama that you add to this, it looks like you spent a lot of time in studying, and it's like your surprise is genuine surprise. It's not feigned, you know?
Right, yeah. It needed more depth, and I knew that I just didn't know how to do it, so you have to be patient with it. Mm-hmm. And I was at the SAM and Franz Ferrari. He said, "You know, you need more special effects sounds."
Yeah,
and I go,
and that helped.
Okay, let me explore that. And that was the answer that I needed to make the wand be another character.
Yes.
And
yeah, I see that.
So that's when the laughing happened and
you're, cackling.
The cackling. Well, it made the wand actually a physical object that had a soul.
A life of its own.
A life of its own. And then he finally comes under control with it at the very end. So it's a nice bookended story.
That's a good point. Yeah, at the very end where you're holding that high like Harry Potter. You know, money comes up and everything then too. No, it's been a nice thing. And then tomorrow you're going to be talking about, as I said, the Merlin Breakfast, about your journey.
Because, yeah, what a journey. Jeez.
This is going to take a long time. Do you mind tomorrow? Can I record the...
Please do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I would like to record that, and I can put that on the podcast and let people hear, because it's probably about 15, 20 minutes or so.
Yeah.
How long? It's not
going to
be a long...
It usually is much longer, so it's going to be truncated.
That's what I thought.
To make sure...
Yeah. Will it be supplemented with any PowerPoint presentation slides or anything?
A little bit. There's not much I can do, but I mean, I'll whiz through some of the slides that I use in my corporate presentation that I do. But
Well, great. So we'll be hearing more about that then tomorrow.
Right.
But you have competed also in FISM before with a similar act.
Yeah.
Right?
Busan.
Yeah.
And that was in 2018. And it's kind of funny. It's like some people would have said, well, that's the end of it. And it's like, no, that 2018 was... what would you call it? It was the dry run. You know, it's a long way to get to a dry run, but then
you were not expecting to win, I assume.
No, not at all. The story, because most people that win, they've been at it for about 8 years. Because if you think about the people that have won, they've been doing that act for almost 8 years. Almost every single one of them. And then it's like, this is your PhD moment. Mm-hmm. This is where you are presenting it to the PhD committee, you know, and you're doing your dissertation.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what this is. So I think we're at that point where it's like, it's done.
Yeah.
It's made its loops and journeys and lots of research.
So you're either going to win or not. This is it.
Well, yeah, this is, yeah. Yeah. Okay. 8 years is about enough, and then now we go on to the next thing.
So, speaking of the next thing, are you going to be then win or lose? And I think you got a winning act. I mean, I'm not saying it because you've been a good friend for a long time. I'm just saying, honestly, it is amazing. I had said before, I think we may have a Grand Prix winner we're bringing back to the U.S., and I think you're the guy who's going to be doing it. It was a phenomenal show, and so original, so many different things. So I know you're going to be doing extremely well. My point is that the next time you're just going to be putting this out and say, okay, been there, done that, that's aside. That might be something I bring back 20 years from now whenever they bring this old codger back on stage.
Yeah.
But you're going to bookshelf this and then start all new? Or
no.
I mean, like the character you created during COVID. I mean, that character, what was his name? Sorry.
Richard Preston
was amazing.
He'll be here tomorrow.
Oh.
In the show tomorrow.
Okay, awesome. So that's my point, is you have such a creative mind as far as bringing up different characters and things. That's why I thought you might put that aside and move on. But
Not necessarily? No, that's been too much work.
To put aside. I just thought you said 8 years. I thought,
Oh, no. It's like 8 years to develop that, and now that's a piece.
Okay, now you're done with...
It's pretty well taken.
It is what it is.
It is what it is. So where it goes from there, anybody's guess.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody's guess.
Yeah.
But right now, it's getting booked more often as a corporate lecture on excellence.
Have you ever done a TED Talk on it?
Yes, I have.
Is that online we can find?
Yeah, if you do a TEDx, Stuart McDonald TEDx. I did a TEDx Detroit.
cool.
Yeah, so you'll see kind of what I do, a snippet of what I do for corporations on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you do this for corporations, do you do the show and then later come back and explain your journey?
I come out and I do the act, and then I explain how I developed it.
When you're still in character, or do you take off your hat?
I take off my hat, you know, but I still have the costume on. Okay. But what I talk about is I use quality engineering. So that in their language, lean and continuous improvement. Mm-hmm. Or in other language would be Six Sigma, Agile, whatever you want to put a name on it. I use those techniques to continually improve, but in a methodical scientific method. Mm-hmm. So that it goes faster and more direct, so that I'm focused on where it needs to go.
So this goes along with what your previous full-time job was in the corporate world. Was it Frigidaire? Who was it?
It was Whirlpool.
Whirlpool, got the wrong
one.
Okay. As an engineer and kind of, so you understand some of the...
No, I wasn't an engineer there. I was a corporate video producer.
Okay.
And so what I did is I did training videos for field service. Mm-hmm. And actually, during the pandemic, I got a call at the end of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. We want you to come back, but in a leadership role. Yeah. So I'm back at Whirlpool.
Okay.
Yeah. And how long that'll last, I don't know.
Okay.
But they wanted me back, and so now I'm developing a new department over there.
Wow.
So I'm having fun with that, but they're very flexible. Mm-hmm. The pandemic changed the whole corporate structure 3 days a week. Okay. You get flexible days.
And you can work the days you want and from home as often as you want?
As long as you're getting the work done and you're communicating with your manager. And I'm like, so here... I've been working.
That's funny.
And at night, I do my act, and everybody's happy.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you think that's a dynamic that has changed across? I'm out of the business world, and I don't see that. But do you think that is endemic of what's been happening?
Yeah. It really is. The way we work now is completely different because the pandemic realized that we were all overbooked with our time. And we were losing track of what was important, which was family, and living a good life.
Yeah,
it's like we're earning all this money, but we have no time to go on vacation. We have no time to spend our money. So what do? We just spend money on things and
that make us temporarily happy.
Temporary happy. Mm-hmm. And so now it's more of a holistic approach.
And you can live wherever you want.
And younger people are coming up. Want that flexibility. So the corporate world has to bend to them or else they cannot. That's why you hear the big resignation. It's like, hey, if you're not going to be flexible, I quit.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening. So now
I see. Interesting.
So now corporate America is saying we've got to
flex with the time.
Yeah.
They were forced to.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Wow. Very interesting. Well, again, Stuart, I wish you luck.
Thank you.
And I'm looking forward to hearing your talk then tomorrow as well.
Yeah.
And also the show tomorrow night. A little bit different.
Show tomorrow night, yeah. I have a lot of surprises for tomorrow night.
Looking forward to it. Stuart McDonald for the Magic Word Podcast. Thank you very much, Stuart.
Okay, Scotty.
Some of the talent that's on the bill at the IBM convention is someone who was on the bill this morning, actually, at a lecture, which I didn't get to hear, but she's going to talk a little bit about that. Hopefully I can twist her arm then right now. And she was on the cover of Vanish magazine, you may have seen most recently, of this month's issue, and that's going to be Alex Hilschke. Hey there, Alex. How are you?
Hi. I'm doing great. How are you?
I am fantastic. Thank you very much for asking. And also, this is your first convention, I guess, where you've been on talent here at the IBM, or have you been doing other conventions?
I did the MAES convention in Philly and Capital Kidvention in D.C.
Okay. And that's just been within the last year, I guess, or how long ago was that?
Within, like, the last 10 months, yeah. Okay. Yep.
So you're really hitting the magic scene hard all of a sudden here.
I'm trying. Yeah, I'm trying to hit it real hard.
You got some other conventions coming up after this one you're doing?
The Yankee Gathering.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, the Yankee Gathering, I always think of typically as being like for collectors or something, but that's not necessarily the case?
No, I think it is for collectors, but they have a talent lineup.
Okay. Are you a collector by chance as well? Or?
I collect books. I've got a lot of magic books.
Oh, yeah? Who is your favorite author? What kind of books do you like? Is it close-up stage? I mean, I know you do a lot of busking and everything then as well.
Yeah. Well, you know, I used to spend a lot of time down at Denny Haney's shop, and so I have, like, what I call the Denny Haney collection, like the Fiske trilogy and the Tommy Wonder books, and so, you know, those are close to my heart.
Sure.
But, yeah, I mean, these days, I like to read a lot of biographies. You know, I'm in the middle of Levent's book on Roy Benson, you know, because I do a lot of stand-up work. So
Moonlight?
By Starlight, yep.
Eventually. Okay.
Yeah.
So you do a lot of manipulation, you say?
Oh, yeah, I do some manipulation. I do a lot of stand-up work. I'm probably like a brute force, sleight of hand person. And but yeah, I do a little bit of card manipulation in my act. So I'm not a manipulator, though. I'm a street performer. So.
Okay. Well, speaking of street performers, did you ever? Who did you study under? I mean, like Cosmo or Cellini or anybody that specifically help or train you or Billy Kidd or anybody or?
Yeah, sure. I met Cosmo back in about 2008, and it was at a Hank Lee's conclave, those old conventions.
Sure.
And he was there pitching Real Magic magazine. He had just started it. And he pushed me to go towards the street. At the time, I was studying card manipulation under John Blake, who was co-owner of Tannins. And I didn't want to be a street performer, but I ended up doing it. It was great. And I think, you know, street performing is really wonderful because you get a lot of flight time and you don't have to know how to book shows, because back then I didn't know how to book shows, but I still get to perform a lot. It's really great. That was like 2010.
Well, I also would think, I don't see a lot of street performers who are women. Billy Kidd's the only one that immediately comes to mind then right now. I believe Romani, also in England, I believe, had done street performing for a long time then as well. And did you find there was any pushback or problem as far as trying to stop and or get tip a crowd?
No, I've never really had many problems out on the street. I try to work in places that are safe. You know, that's important to me. And, you know, I carry a big stick, you know, so I can fend my, you know, I don't want to get into that. But anyway, yeah. So, yeah, no, I've never really had any issues.
You have a place that you prefer more than others? I mean, most street performers say, yeah, New Orleans is my favorite. But, I mean, what's yours?
Yeah, I really enjoyed Florida this winter. I was down there for 2 months, and it was just, I love the weather. It's awesome.
Like in the Keys, or?
Well, I don't want to like tip the okay. spot, if that's okay.
That's fine. No,
yeah.
I know there's some places obviously that you need to go where the tourists are. That's why I mentioned New Orleans, and there are a few places like in I start to say Cellini's book. Actually, it was his ex-wife's book who had written this and talking about how they had traveled, and they kind of go with the sun, you know, basically, and try and find the right places where there are the tourists, and eventually, you know, I like New York, even on the streets up there and everything, as well as Renaissance Festival. You work Renfest or anything like that?
I don't work Renfest, but, you know, I live close to New England, so I do like a lot of their autumn arts festivals and things like that. And yeah, speaking of Jim Cellini's old partner, Eileen McFalls, I spent some time with her this year, and she's wonderful. She's really amazing. Yeah, and that book is fantastic.
Yeah, I did an episode with her. We chatted for the podcast, you know, some time ago, and it was delightful talking with her and getting to read the book and all. So it's a lot of interesting stories.
That book was an incredibly exciting surprise. Like, I didn't see it coming. I've read Cellini's books, you know, dozens of times, but Eileen's was a real gift to the community.
It was from a different perspective, from the standpoint of she wasn't a magician. She just kind of had met him, and she had a degree in something else, I'd forgotten what now, from college, but it's kind of, hey, I'm kind of giving that up, and I'm going to start, you know, going with Cellini and doing whatever it takes and living on the street, you know, basically, and then eventually having her own thing that she was doing. It was a fascinating book. I agree. Good one to read.
Yeah, fantastic. People should read it.
Now, you live in a tiny house, I understand that also. I have seen that, like, on television, you know, HGTV or whatever, people building tiny houses, and you got a tiny house. You and your wife, I guess, live in a tiny house, is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. 235 square feet.
Oh, man.
And we design and build it ourselves in one calendar year, working evenings and weekends,
yeah.
And we've got three kids, so there's five human beings in 235 square feet.
How old are the kids?
My kids are 5 through 9. Yeah.
And so they're all staying in one room. It's hard to say. They wouldn't have their own bed. They only got their own beds, but yeah, wow. That's hard to kind of move around. Now, it's not a movable house. It is a permanent house on some property, I assume, so it's not like a mobile home kind of a thing.
Well, you know, it's built on a trailer. We built it in Pennsylvania and trucked it up to New York. And just to back up real quick, my kids, it's 235 square feet of, like, living space downstairs, but the kids do have their own lofts upstairs, and so they have their own spaces. But, yeah, no, it's parked on in a little field, you know, up in the middle of nowhere.
And as I said, I missed, unfortunately, I was your talk then this morning, but someone was telling about how you have to walk and drive so far to get your mail or at the end of the drive, or what is it? A little ways away.
Yeah, I mean, it's literally parked in the middle of a farm field, and so I have to walk through like 100 yards of mud to get to my car during the springtime and try to keep your pants clean before a gig that way. And then, I have to take a ferry. It's like a half-hour ferry ride to get to population where I can do my magic. So,
Just to get there. So how much stuff are you carrying? I mean, just like one suitcase of stuff?
Or? Well, it depends what I'm doing. You know, if I'm doing my street show, I can show up with a tiny backpack. You know, I mean, I have a tabled act that I can take to the street, but I can also, you know, work without a table. So
that's what I was wondering, if you just kind of like with Cellini, just kind of throw a table over your shoulder, but you don't have that or do that.
Yeah, no, I can be pretty light. You know, and then whenever I go to places where I do like big shows, like 80 to 100 people, I do bring a big case with me, and that's that becomes my riser so that I can stand up and, you know, be taller than the crowd and, you know, create a big show experience, you know, just out of nowhere. It's pretty cool.
Speaking of that, then, how do you tip the crowd? I mean, a lot of magicians might do juggling or, you know, old days that they were using a trumpet or they had a little monkey or something. How do you just start with one person and then build or what?
Yeah, so, you know, starting a show as a magician is incredibly hard because you can't just start juggling and people see it. I have used lots of different techniques, and over the last, you know, I guess 12 years that I've been doing this, now at the point I'm confident enough to just stand up on my case, bang my stick, and make an announcement. And I say, hey, excuse me, everybody, there's going to be a show here. It's with me. It's starting right now. Don't take your eyes off this stick. And then invariably, you know, 10 people stop, and then it builds from there. And usually I can build my show very, very quickly. So
That's amazing. And are you competing against other kinds of street performers as well, where you work typically?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times where I work, it's musicians. And so the musicians are not necessarily a competition for the act, but they're well, for the space, actually. Yeah, and so, you know, they don't need a lot of space, but they might be in a spot that is kind of ideal for a bigger show. So that's really the only competition usually. Street performers are usually like a big family, and we hang out together and, you know, have cookouts and stuff like that.
So. And so with the street performing, do you also get a lot of opportunities to work other shows in which you're saying, hey, do you work birthday parties or corporate events or what? I mean, in other words, does business get business from that?
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. I think that people don't have a really good imagination. If they see you in one role, they assume that that is your role.
That's true.
So as a street performer, I'm never going to get booked for a birthday party. Okay. But I do get booked for festivals and things that are like street performing. And I've gotten really, really good gigs that way and recurring gigs that way. And I do also have like a local business where I have a kid show business so that I don't have to travel as much. But none of that business comes from the street.
Yeah, well, that's true. Whenever that I'll do like a cocktail party, then other companies will say, hey, you're great. We want you for our party also. And I'll say, well, I also do after dinner in stand-up shows. Well, you do, you know. And I was just talking with someone just this week about that very thing in which that what he was saying is that he will do close-up and then also do like a half-hour stand-up for a larger group. So they get the idea that he does a little bit of both. So I assume that you use a lot of kids then also. And so perhaps by using those children, they might get the idea, hey, you know, she's good with kids, and so maybe we should be booking her also for a birthday party.
Yeah, no, you're definitely right. And my character on the street is not like the typical street magician. Like a lot of street magicians these days, they emulate like Gazzo, and they're kind of abrasive. And
wouldn't want him for my birthday party for my 5-year-old. Yeah.
No, definitely not. My character is like totally non-threatening, and my character is also like super friendly. So despite that I'm doing very adult magic, kids love me. And, you know, in the town where I work most often, all the kids in that well, it's a small city, like they all know me, you know, and most of them have bent forks that I've bent in a show for them. And they, you know, they keep them on a shelf or whatever.
I think it's important, that they kind of get a good, and I assume that you're not in a costume of some sort.
You know, I have a costume, but it's not like, it's nothing that is crazy or over the top, you know. But
it is prince's
dress or something.
No, definitely not. Not my character.
No, I would just think there are princess parties and things. When I talk to Katrina, that she tries doing these kinds of things because she wants those kinds of parties. She was doing those kinds of parties, you know. So. Anyhow, that's great. And so your experience so far at the IBM convention has been great. You've been meeting a lot of people. And so what do you think of the convention in Atlanta? How has this been for you?
This convention is amazing. It's fantastic. I grew up going to conventions with my dad when I was like 7, 8, 9 years old. And but then for a long time, I didn't go to conventions. And it is so wonderful to be back. And it's really nice, you know, a great networking opportunity. Just wonderful people are here. Yeah, so many new friends.
Well, hopefully I'm one of them, and we've become friends, and we look forward to seeing you down the road then also.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's such a pleasure to talk with you, Scott.
Mine as well. Thank you very much. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Alec Hilsky. This is Scotty out.